So welcome to Sunasagini. Hello to all. It's been a while since our last episode. As you all know, my name is Sweta. My pronouns are she or they, and I'm based in DC, and I'm one of the Sangini Pait organizing members. Today, I'm really excited to bring on a new voice, a new guest, and I'm hoping that you all may have heard of her, or if it's your first time, then, you know, I really want all of us to welcome her.
Okay, thank you, Sweta. So hello, everyone. I'm very happy to be on this podcast, and thank you for having me. My name is Nirvana Bhandari. I'm originally from Kathmandu, and I'm based in Kathmandu now as well. So I do a few different things, but one of my biggest passions is writing and feminism. And I love especially when I can combine creativity with feminism and working with women, especially young women in these areas. I work as a feminist writer. I'm a digital activist. I also have two different projects or initiatives that I'm a part of. So Yota is called the F Project Nepal, and that is a writer's collective as well as a platform for feminist storytelling, which is very popular. Women can submit their stories online anonymously or if they want to be identified. Ani Arko is called Nirvana Vibes, and that is a startup enterprise where I curate experiences and events, especially for women. That's a little bit about me.
Thank you. Thank you for introducing yourself. And, you know, there was something that you mentioned, and I sort of wanted to pause and ask you about that, if that's all right. You mentioned that you're a visual feminist. Did I hear that correctly?
No.
Oh, sorry. Feminist visual writer
and digital activist, yeah.
Digital activist. Okay. I was like, oh, what is a visual activist? This is something new. So, okay, nope, that's me mishearing it. So, feminist writer and digital activist. Okay, that's great to hear. Thank you for being here. You know, this is something that I've been wanting to do, reaching out to you, and there are a couple of others. But, you know, I see myself as an introvert, and I'm a highly anxious person, so something I'm working on. But this is definitely one platform I feel comfortable connecting with new voices, other Nepali feminist individuals. And so I'm really honored to have you here. So thank you so much for your time and your energy, Adzo. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the topic of today and, you know, sharing our heart and thoughts about it, I wanted to do some rapid fire round questions with you. So I have 4 questions, and they're very quick. So, and the first thing that pops into your head, just, you know, unfiltered, just share with us. Mm-hmm. So the first one is actually an option. So I would like to ask you, do you prefer drinking chia or coffee?
Coffee.
Okay. The next one is, what is your go-to spot in Nepal?
Oh, that's so difficult. I like lots of kind of like cute little coffee shops. That's a bit quieter, so I can go there and write. I can't think of anything specifically, but yeah. There's always new restaurants and cafes popping up at Manduma, so I gotta have to pick this one.
Yeah. I mean, is that a good thing? Because it sounds like you're always exploring or finding new gems. Or is it more a loss of having consistency? Which one would you say?
No, I like going to different places for sure. Major kind of work, the way I work is I like change, especially in my surroundings. So when I can have kind of like a creative or cozy little space of different kinds, and funny, I like having that option.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's definitely something I noticed whenever I go to Nepal. Even something that we mentioned in our previous episode is, you know, all the different cafes that are opening up, and the ambience, and there's more intention on the decoration and the design. I figure that's a really nice space and environment for creatives to be in. And actually, you just confirmed that. So, the next question I have is, what book or TV show are you currently watching or reading?
I'm currently watching Euphoria because the way the reviews and memes that are making social media, especially on Instagram, about this show. So I had to explore what it was about, and I'm enjoying it. I guess a quick review of it is, it makes me quite concerned and sad if this isn't an accurate representation of how life is for teenagers now, because Oh, it's been a very long time since I was a teenager. I'm 30 now. So when I've been sad when lagging at first to see you, and suddenly get this kind of very depressing life, really, or lives of teenagers. But it is a good storyline as well.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that show. That's something that I've started watching with my, actually I've started and I completed watching with my friend. And I have the same thought, right? You know, they're, if for anyone that hasn't watched it, they are teenagers in high school. And I think that just doesn't escape my mind. And it's just something that I'm also really shocked by, and just how much is exposed and shared and the depths of everything that they share. And I always think back in my teenage years, and I think it's maybe 30 or 40% of what they show on that show. So I'm hoping it is entertainment, but I know it may be reality for some, but to what extent, we don't know. But it is definitely entertaining, and it makes you think, but it's a lot. So I encourage people to take care of themselves when they're watching this show.
Yeah,
that's not one I would say for binging, unless you go get a drink of water or something really refreshing, because it's heavy. And I have one last question for you. What do you keep under your pillow or by your bed?
Water. I drink a lot of, not under my pillow, obviously, next to my bed. I drink a lot of water. Even if I don't have a sip of water for like half an hour, it's so my body needs constant hydration. So I actually take my water bottle with me absolutely everywhere, even when I go out to restaurants and stuff, because I need to have it with me in case they don't fill up my glass fast enough.
It sounds like you come prepared, so that's awesome. I hope you have your glass of water. I do have mine today. So thank you for the very quick rapid round, and for the answers that you shared so far. You know, it's something that's been on my mind. It's something that has been suggested in the past whenever we did Sanghinibhit, get-togethers. We used to do this before COVID. It used to be in each city. We would meet in person. And then when COVID happened, it was meeting virtually. But that's really slowed down. But one of the topics that I remember our Sanghini members mentioned is also, you know, talking about marriage, what marriage means in our society, you know, how it may impact people differently. And so I'm really excited to talk about that with you today. And, you know, the first question that, you know, came up in my mind is, in Nepali society and in Nepali culture, you know, what is the view on marriage? So I wanted to, you know, bring that question up to you and see what are your thoughts.
I think marriage is seen as something that's extremely essential, that is kind of inescapable. It has to be done, you know, by everyone, men and women. But of course, the pressure is a lot greater on women, especially to marry maybe what's seen as the right sort of person when it comes to class, caste, ethnicity, and also occupation and success level. So marriage, it's really seen as something that you have to do, that is an institution and a social obligation that you cannot escape from. And I think people who even think that it's a choice is extremely limited. And it's a very new, I think, way of thinking, that maybe you don't have to get married. But QA is still considered, I think, a very radical thought.
And, you know, from what you mentioned in the first sentence, you were saying, you know, it's something that has to be done. I'm just curious, you know, is that something that you felt when you were growing up? You know, how did you pick up on that message? That's something I always reflect on as well, you know, in society. Where are these messages coming from? And, you know, how did you know that is something that is expected?
I didn't know any people who were divorced or separated. Like, my parents didn't have anyone around them. And I didn't know any single adults. Until when I was young, you know, you felt like 25, 27 was so old. Until when I was married. So, at that age, I didn't know anyone who was still single. Of course, I'm also in movies, media that we consume, not just Nepali, but a Western media is equally and semi-responsible for this, is always showing people in couples and especially married. So it's not something I really thought of otherwise, that there wasn't any other choice, that it just seemed like a rite of passage that you had to do.
Yeah, I really resonate with what you said. It's marriage has, I think even when I'm reflecting on, as you know, growing up, I'm in my late 20s now, but I remember even when socializing as a kid, you know, even when you're doing house play, I don't know if you used to play that as kids, but you know, you're pretending to be, you know, making a house, being a house. And so one person would act out as, back then for me, it was one person would be the husband, one person would be the wife. So even the concept of what marriage is, it was very a man and a woman. And I don't know why, but even as a young kid, that did not excite me. And I was always somehow I was always the husband. So I don't know, in my head, even how we decided that, it was never picked. I never chose it, but it felt like society was always picking these roles, and I didn't really fit the role of a wife or a feminine woman or any of that. So, you know, I'm just curious when you're saying that, even when I'm reflecting, I know marriage has always been there. Just like you said, the adults around me, they're all partnered up. They have kids. There are very little examples of people doing anything outside of that norm. But I think once I stepped outside of Nepal, I would see, you know, couples that maybe got married and they weren't from the same, you know, caste or class, but they were also from different countries and, you know, all of this. So I think over time, you sort of, once you find examples, you start questioning maybe the norm or the model that you were presented with.
Definitely.
I don't know if that's something you've experienced or if
you've
gone through.
Yeah, for sure. And it also really excited me, you know, when I realized there's different alternative models of relationships. So more funny, when I was younger, I remember having a best friend when I was in grade 4 or 5. And this was also when I was living in the States. And she told me her parents weren't married. And I was so shocked because I didn't even know you could do that. I was like, you have to get married first in order to have a kid. So the fact that they had her, but they weren't married was so baffling to me. I also lived for a long time in the West, America, Australia. And yeah, seeing like interracial couples, seeing obviously queer couples, all these different unconventional ways of loving and being in relationships was something that was so exciting to me. And broadened my horizon a lot, and also gave me a lot of opportunities to explore myself and the kind of relationships that I wanted to build for myself.
That's so beautiful, you know, hearing that that's how you received it, when you saw something different. I always wonder, because not everyone has that exact response, right? Something different for some people may be exciting if it resonates with you. If it's something that you didn't know you were kind of looking for. I wonder at any point when you saw some, you know, a marriage or a partnership that was different from, you know, just what we talked about, did you ever have an opposite reaction, sort of, you know, whether it's fear or resistance or judgment, did that happen in your process too? So this is going a little bit off, but this is sort of how my conversations go. There's just something you shared that resonated.
Yeah, not really that I can think of. Because I think it was when I was in my 20s and kind of had those critical thinking skills. And Ani had traveled and he just was exploring a lot of facets of myself that I started seeing maybe more examples of this. Because I was probably seeking them out as well, you know, these kind of unconventional Banumna communities or dynamics. So mala just koile aversion bako or fear bako, I don't really remember.
You know, building off of what you had shared so far about, you know, marriage is something that's just part of society. It's something that you do. I'm just curious, you know, from your experience, from what you've seen, what you've, you know, heard from your friends, family members, what was shared with you. You know, what are the current types of marriages that you're aware of in Nepal or in Nepali society?
So someone, that biggest differentiation that people always make in Nepal is love or arranged marriage, you know. You label tara aile huncha ni, I was thinking like hamle label nagarne type pani kati dherai relationship haru huncha, you know. Mainstream ma that's what we differentiate, but I'm sure there's so many other types of marriage. But yeah, first covering the love and arranged, but arranged is seen as when your family kind of chooses the family, the person that they think is suitable for you, that's any kind of, especially I think really to do a lot with caste or class. So someone who matches you in class, is of the same caste as you, is successful, has a good reputation in society, so the subway evaluate gorera, then the family kind of suggests someone that, okay, you should get to know this person. On Ethiopia, I think there's a lot of variations in how forceful or liberal your parents are. So I think some parents, they more make it a sort of introduction that why don't you get to know this person, they give them some time to date, a few months, and then they decide it's a marriage, good deeds and stuff. Whereas I think there's other situations where it's a lot more like, okay, this person is suitable, all right, this is the person you have to marry. So one, I think good thing is that as far as I know, it is becoming more and more acceptable to have a love marriage, and especially to have a love marriage with someone who's not from the same caste as you. So that's good to see. But yeah, as I mentioned, I'm sure there's so many other dynamics of marriage where maybe we talk about open marriage or polyamorous marriages, or just where the partners decide what works for them, and that might not be conventional at all, but also no one else knows about it, because at the end of the day it is also no one else's business, you know, what works in a partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the two I'm hearing that you shared is love and arranged, and that's also the two that I'm aware of that I think is commonly talked about. And it's interesting that you mentioned the biggest difference really with arranged and love is arranged is, you know, it's families joining and there's family involvement. It's pretty much the community you're born into joining with another community. Whereas love, you know, I wonder if it's this concept that, you know, it's this idea that you as an individual get to pick the person you generally connect with. But I don't know about others, but whenever I'm reading or listening or watching, love is shown in so many different ways. And even that is constantly changing, growing, you know, being questioned, which I think is great. Mm. And it's funny that you're talking about the process of arranged marriage. And I'm wondering if the difference between love and arranged marriage, the first thing that really pops into my mind is maybe the expectations that could be so different depending on what path you choose. You know, what are some of the expectations of marriage in Nepali society that that you're aware of, that you may have picked up on?
I actually see it as love boy, arranged marriage boy. Nepal ma basne ho bhane chai, there's big ties with the in-laws, and it goes both ways, but especially for women, because I think there is still a lot of expectation that biya garepachi pani you have to live with the in-laws. Also really depends on the number of kids. So if it's only one son, you know, then he has this obligation to look after his aging parents. And therefore, when he gets married, then his wife also is living in the same house and looking after his parents. So I see it in both situations. Ani, I think that's so much pressure, because I think, and maybe this is a reason why also couples would choose to move to the West, you know, so that they don't have this like obligation of always looking after the in-laws. I think there's a lot of that. And then there's so much limitation on freedom. Even though you are a grown adult, you still have these restrictions on how you can dress, what time you can go out till, who you can hang out with. And if you exam community kind of surveillance, examinate
yourself. Yeah, you bring up really important points that even I've noticed, I've constantly heard even through family and friends. This idea that it's sort of a couple of things that we're thinking about when we choose One is, you know, after the, I don't know if it's the same for you, but after, you know, basically what I've also been taught and is when when you're in school, make sure you're focusing on your studies only. You know, you can only date after you're done. And then when you're done and you're graduating, all of a sudden there's all these questions that I was asked. So do you have a boyfriend? Mm-hmm. So there's almost this unspoken understanding that as long as you didn't tell us, the parents and the adults, you could have done what you needed to, but mm-hmm. we just didn't want to know about it. I feel like there's always this unspoken way, like there's a message that society gives us through our parents, our the elders, you know, people we're meant to look up to, and then what actually works in practice and how people meet each other and organically build relationships. So just even you highlighting, you know, the involvement of family, that's, it's almost, I wonder how people navigate that. And you brought up a really important one, which is part of the dating process. And when you're, you know, if you choose to live your life with a partner and when you're engaging in that relationship and building, a big factor is deciding, okay, are you going to stay in Nepal or are you going to go abroad? And I know you mentioned the West, but I, you know, I've known a couple of people and I realized that there are a lot of Nepalese in Australia, in Thailand, in the Middle East. But again, it differs on depending on your situation and the connections you have. But I noticed people are really spread out. I wonder if this is something that you've navigated for yourself and, you know, what are some things that you had to think about for yourself, you know, in terms of whether you wanted to, whether you questioned the idea of marriage and whether it was for you, or you sort of, you're in that process, it is for me, and if you could share a little bit of how you're thinking through it.
Sure. So my mother had an arranged marriage at quite a young age, at 21. Mm-hmm. But you know, this is something obviously you always remember, and you kind of feel the impact, I feel like, in some sort of way. So when I was around 24, for some reason, although no one was really saying to me, "Winston, it's time to get married," I don't know, I felt this very, I don't know, sense of pressure, for very intense sort of pressure that, okay, I'm 24 and now people are expecting me to get married. And I don't really know where that came from. I mean, now that I'm 30 and in the last few years, I haven't felt that at all. I think really developed the self-confidence and assertiveness that when people do ask me, I'm able to laugh it off, I'm able to make a joke, or I'm able to really question their own thinking, right? Of why do women have to get married? Why does everyone have to get married? So our little middle approach has been this, because at the age of 30, a lot of women I know around me are getting married, about living back in Nepali society. So I do face a lot of these questions. I'm more and more open about the fact that I don't believe in marriage and it's not for me, and I don't plan to ever get married. So I've developed that confidence, but I think also a lot of people, or they see it as a reflection of my character and that I'm a bad woman for not wanting to get married. And I haven't really had to hear these comments directly, but they might be circulating, you know, behind my back.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing that. And for, you know, sharing where you stand in terms of your thoughts on marriage and what you want in your personal life. I think just like we were talking about earlier, it's difficult to hear decisions and thoughts from women that don't fit the exact norm. So there are a lot of people that I know that are seeking to get married or at least seeking to have a partner. And, you know, it's refreshing to hear from you in terms of you mentioning that, you know, marriage may not be for you. And did I hear that you communicated that to your circle, your close circle, your family?
Yes, I have. So yeah, I think over the years, my parents have realized that, you know, I am living quite an unconventional life, and that makes me really happy in terms of my career, in terms of my interests, in terms of kind of how my life is progressing. So I don't think they were too surprised to hear it, but I did tell them directly, you know, I don't believe in the concept, the institution of marriage, and I don't plan to ever get married. In terms of how they responded to it, they were pretty chill with it. My mom said, you know, in this time, like more and more people are choosing not to be married and just live in partnerships, and that's so okay. Ani, I think I'm quite lucky that they have also lived abroad for such a long time that they are exposed to this concept. Whereas I think Unaru, if they'd always lived in Nepal, I'm sure they would have a different reaction. So that went well. And with my friends, I'm quite open. With other people as well, family members, I try to, you know, lightly bring up the subject, or when they bring it up, I try to kind of lightly, gently challenge their thinking about this.
Yeah, you know, that's so amazing that you felt safe and confident, or I don't know, actually, I'm assuming you felt confident, but it sounds like, you know, did you feel safe to have that conversation with your parents? I know usually having conversations with the people that matter, you know, quite a lot, and especially on the topic of marriage, can be quite, it can be heavy. It can be, you know, there's a lot tied to the idea of marriage, and especially being a woman, you know, I'm sure parents have their own hopes and dreams. So I wondered, you know, when you took the step, what the experience was, what sort of motivated you, and
it was quite light, the whole thing, as I mentioned. I think I've already covered it, but yeah, because my parents live in Australia now, I basically just sent my dad an article about how I feel, and then told my mom kind of even briefly on the phone. So it wasn't this big deal. But maybe in the future it might be, you know, when we're in the same space, or something happens, or I get older, then maybe that would be another conversation to be had. But right now it's actually been very easy.
Yeah. Well, usually I like to, you know, congratulate people when they're taking steps for themselves. So I'm really happy to hear that for you. And, you know, tying it back into, I wonder, you know, marriage and the pressure that you also mentioned, I wonder if there's somewhat of a commonality for people, you know, at different stages, and it's tied to the age. Because you mentioned that you felt that pressure at 24, and, you know, funny enough, the pressure that I felt was a little bit earlier. It was, I think, in my 20s, and I was in my final year in university. But I remember what woke me up is hearing from my parents, because, you know, it's common to get married. You know, my family also comes from arranged marriages. I think there's one love marriage, but usually the common way of connecting with one another is through arrangement. It's through what your family, who they pick. So even at that age, I remember they brought up that people are asking, or that they could look for me. And it was sort of this bubble that bursted because I wasn't in Nepal, and I somehow thought I was immune and those rules didn't apply to me. Again, very naive of me to think about that. And I did study sociology, so I was still very interested in social norms and, you know, what it meant to be a Nepali woman, a girl. I was always questioning how things worked and how people were and how they existed and spoke to one another. So when that bubble burst, I think the first thing I did was study really hard and I stopped going out. I stopped socializing. But the pressure can be really, it can be an awakening for, at least it was for me. So, you know, it's refreshing to hear from you that over time, each year, I think that pressure can feel different. And I wonder if having those conversations with the people closest to you can make a big difference. And so I wonder, you know, at this stage, like you mentioned, I'm also in my late 20s, and there's always a wedding coming up for my friends, which I still find it exciting to go to. I think for me, I've noticed that I'm the designated choreographer, or I think my future is the auntie that always has a drink in her hand and is enjoying herself on the dance floor. But, you know, you have to find ways that you can fit into any social gathering and find a way to belong. So I wonder if, you know, for you, if you're having a lot of wedding invitations, you know, how do you navigate those spaces? And if that's changed for you.
Yeah, I'm very happy to attend weddings. I kind of speak about this as well. I'm like, yeah, you're inviting me to this awesome party, I'll go. And, you know, it is about respecting each other's choices at the end of the day, for sure. So you might, if this couple, you know, if these people feel like getting married to each other is what makes them happy. Of course, I'm all for that, especially when it's loved ones and friends. But I just, I try to talk more and more about marriage because I want women to know that there is an alternative option, And just because you are a woman of a certain age, you don't have to cave into marriage because of family pressure, because you think after a certain age you'll become undesirable and no one will want you and your life is meaningless. So I think it's really important for us to talk about that because, especially if you are financially independent, and you don't have to rely on a man in that sense, right? It's because women were economically dependent on men that marriage was so important. But if that's been eliminated, it is okay to be a woman of any age and not be married. So this is really the message that I'm trying to drive home. And yeah, at the same time, like I really enjoy going to weddings and dressing up and eating and drinking and dancing.
Yeah, no, thank you for highlighting that. I think, just like you said, whenever it comes to anything about society, social norms, sort of what is so immersed in our culture, sort of asking where this came from and what's the purpose of it. We might not always get the answers from our social circles, but I know, on the internet, you can search, you can always question, you can speak to individuals. There's so much that's accessible now. It's just a matter of knowing where to look, which can be the challenge. And just like you said, those factors that people consider for their own life, I think you highlighted a really big one, which is financial independence or financial security. And that's really tied with marriage and how that could change. But you only realize when that changes if you're doing that reflection on your own, if you're able to have that reflection with your family members or with your partner. I think that's something that I always like to emphasize, and I think that our Sangini Bhet is all about. It's creating a space where we can reflect, and really uncomfortable emotions can come up, or even great emotions can come up, but it's leaving space for that. So really thank you for, highlighting some of the steps you took, that are unconventional, that, feel right to you. I think even figuring out what feels right to somebody is a journey on its own. And so I encourage everyone to do that and, carve out that space for yourself, because I think our inside voice is always something that's really important. But if you're somebody that hasn't been encouraged to do that, if you're in an environment that doesn't allow you to do it, finding ways to do it. But then when you are outside, for example, I think we kind of keep making this comparison of being in Nepal versus outside of Nepal. And, I'm really cognizant and aware that in the environment may be different in Nepal, just like you were sort of mentioning. But I noticed even in yours, you mentioned your parents are outside. So there's a little difference as well in that. And I think overall, I think the point of this episode and our episodes is to encourage you to continue having the difficult conversations. Hopefully it carves out more of the life that you want. I wanted to bring it back to you, Nirvana, and see if there was any additional thoughts about, marriage, about what it means, how it's changed, any reflections that you wanted to share as well.
Yeah. So one thing I think something that really shows this society, people cannot imagine how a woman can function or exist without a man. I've seen in some ridiculous examples, yeah, when I moved back to Nepal. And that's something like getting a bank account or getting a SIM card. So to form a mapani, they ask for the details of your father or your husband, name, occupation, everything. And it absolutely shocked me, especially of doing things, but a SIM card, like, why on earth do you need to know my father's details and phone number so that I, an adult woman, can get a SIM card? And it's like, I don't even think they reflect on why that's still important. And yet all these forms still require the details of your male guardian, which is so indicative of how Unsani patriarchy still continues to function so strongly in our society. Yeah, I think we are living in an exciting time where there are more options. I would love to see more like examples and representations of unconventional or unorthodox love and relationships in the media, in what we see around us, whether that's about queer love, whether that's about not being married, about polyamory, you know. So it would be so nice to see more of that and it being talked about more openly. And I think decided to buy that, huh? And yeah, and for women to kind of, I guess, become assertive and confident enough to say no to marriage if that's really not what they want. And you know, like Nepali women are also stuck in this very infuriating trap where we are blamed if we're, let's say, past 30 and not married. But then, for example, if we cave into this pressure and we marry the next person, you know, we're told to marry, and then it doesn't work out and we decide to get divorced a few years down the track, then that's equally stigmatized, you know? So there's really no way of winning. It's if you finally cave in and then at one point decide, no, this is so not for me, then divorce is another thing that's so taboo as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for a woman to exist without being tied to a man is still seen as something that's so incomprehensible. And we really need to challenge that.
Yeah, thank you for, you know, highlighting not just what's existing, but what you want to see more of, sort of that longing of different examples. And this resonates so much what you said, just, you know, being tied to a man. And I think that's very difficult. And I know there's probably so much that is embedded in the structure, you know, whether it's being able to open up a bank account, or if it's owning property or starting a business, you know, all these different ventures that, you know, that kind of tie to financial independence, or you even just living a life that you want. So, you know, the sort of the takeaway I'm getting from our conversation is, one is being able to have that reflective space, being able to, you know, being able to question sort of some of the concepts that are thrown at us or encouraged of us. And then finding, the third one is finding out if there's a different option, you know, looking for it, just so you're not making a decision without knowing that something else may be a better fit for you. So for me, that means, you know, being able to explore, but I know not everybody may have the same time or energy. But I also echo the same longing that you mentioned, finding more examples of different partnerships, of love, of even arranged marriages that work, just any kind of relationship that does exist. You know, just like you mentioned, Nirvana, I think they do, it's just, it's not openly talked about. And I do sense that a lot of people fear judgment or being ridiculed or being isolated. I think because, you know, I noticed that, you know, Nepali society is very communal. It's very a sense of belonging or having a role, a function in community. And if you're sort of trying to carve out something else for you, it can be quite isolating too. So, you know, part of the reason why I really wanted to reach out to you is I could see all the creative initiatives that you have. And it's exciting to see all the different voices that are coming on and, you know, the honest stories that people are sharing. So just like you said, it is an exciting time, and I encourage everyone else to also check out what you've produced, what you're sharing. Yeah, so if there's anything you'd like us to share, you know, please send it along and we'll put it on this episode.
Sure, sounds good.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. In today's episode, we talked about marriage in Nepali society with Nirvana. She's a feminist writer and digital activist. And just to remind you, she is both the founder of the F Project Nepal, a writer's collective and platform for feminist storytelling, and Nirvana Vibes, which is a startup enterprise that curates events and experiences for women. Please check out her Instagram, and the information is provided in the episode description. So we really encourage you to follow her and see what she is curating for all of you. And moving forward, we will be taking a short break, but we hope to get back to all of you soon with a new episode. Take care for now and get some rest. Bye.